Max Bergman here. For more of the Asset Podcast, please go to our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/assetpodcast. That's patreon.com/assetpodcast. You'll hear the full interviews with our roster of experts and analysts. You'll also get more exclusive content from the Asset team, like our interview with the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, our live event reacting to Robert Mueller's testimony, an upcoming episode following the mysterious trail of dead Russians around the 2016 election, and a whole lot more. Don't miss out. Sign up today at www.patreon.com/assetpodcast.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
No, I mean, I don't want to be the flippant Brit, but I would just say, without naming names, that there are many, many people in this colourful, dark saga who could be characterised as useful idiots. But I think not everybody, and the degree of wittingness, to my mind, certainly as far as the principal guy is concerned, as Donald Trump is concerned, his interactions with Russia go back all the way into the mid-1980s. His business model, to a large degree, was predicated on Russian money going into his various property enterprises and sort of Trump corporate structures. He, if you believe the Steele dossier, was interacting with very senior Russians, including people connected to the very top of the state from 2013 onwards. And I think that he knew, for better or worse, precisely what was going on. I think most people do, that he didn't expect to win the election. And I think a lot of this flows from his kind of habitual and, you might say, unexamined amoralism, which has driven his career, his professional career in real estate, and still drives him today.
I'm Max Bergman, and this is The Asset. Joining me is Luke Harding. He's a British journalist, the foreign correspondent for The Guardian, and he was based in Russia for The Guardian from 2007 until February 2011, when he was refused re-entry to Russia and was deported on the same day. And he's been tracking the Russia investigation incredibly closely. In fact, he wrote the book on collusion. Literally, the book is called Collusion. And Luke, thanks for joining me today.
Great to be with you.
So I want to start with your theory of when the Trump-Russia ties really were established. In your book, you talk about Trump's connection to the Soviet Union, his connection to Czechoslovakia. And I was wondering if you could sort of elaborate on particularly the Czechoslovakian angle, which you've done some original reporting on after your book came out, about Trump's connections to Czechoslovakia and Czechoslovakian intelligence's interest in Donald Trump.
It's a fascinating area, and there's a recurring question I've been asking myself for a long time now, which I think Vladimir Putin will know the answer to this, and that is, when did the KGB first open its Donald Trump file? Now if this file exists in physical form, we know it'll be bigger than several warehouses by now, but at some point, a KGB case officer will have taken a kind of A4-sized piece of cardboard, written Trump in Cyrillic characters on it, and opened up a dossier. And we can make an informed, intelligent guess. And I know from material that's been discovered in the Czech archives in Prague, that the STB, the Czechoslovak Communist Intelligence Agency, began spying on Trump round about the period that he was dating and then, of course, married in 1977, Ivana, his first wife. Now, this was pretty unusual. Clearly, he was someone who was upwardly mobile in American business and for the spies in Prague, he was a natural target. We know that the STB, for example, kept tabs on Ivanka. I've read reports from, I would say, the late 1970s, where they are talking about her visits to see her parents in provincial Bohemia, in a place called Zlin. They're reporting on the fact that two-year-old Donald Trump Jr. had broken his leg, poor guy, the fact that they have a Swiss nanny, American nanny, and so on. And a lot of this material is fairly banal. It's not terribly exciting. It's sort of sub-John le Carré. But if you go through the records, you can see that this continues throughout the late Cold War period, that there are Russian, Czech, agents who we think are sharing their product with Moscow and with the Russians, who are keeping tabs on the Trumps in Manhattan and Trump Tower. They've got code names, things like Lubos, for example. We have a report which I found from a model collective Czechoslovak farm, where a delegation went to Trump Tower, had a long discussion with him about investment, about buying planes. All of this was cabled back to Prague by a confidential agent and source. He's now in his 70s. I knocked on his door when I was in Prague last fall, and unfortunately he didn't want to talk to me. but you can sort of see a pattern here. And the reason this is significant is, of course, that the Czechoslovak security services shared routinely their intelligence product with Moscow and with the KGB. And
right, it was KGB a officers, partnership, essentially.
It was a partnership. KGB officers working inside the SDP itself. And so... So you've got this Czech stream of reporting, this Czechoslovak stream of reporting. And then, of course, we have a kind of ramping up by the late 1980s, when Donald Trump starts to talk for the first time about his presidential ambitions. And these reports are then being funneled from the provincial Czechoslovak security services to the big guys in Prague, to the first directorate, which deals with foreign intelligence. And separately, what we know from the KGB via defectors like Oleg Gordievsky, who spied for 11 years for British intelligence and then escaped the Soviet Union and ended up in the UK. We know that the KGB were sending out memos to their intelligence officers, especially in America, urging them to do more to recruit agents, confidential contacts, to basically get more US assets. And this, of course, is around the period that Donald Trump goes to Soviet Moscow for the first time at the invitation of the Soviet government.
And this is also, you know, in the 1980s, you had this sort of ramped up Soviet fear of Ronald Reagan, of the United States, of U.S. intentions, and sort of this escalation of Russian or Soviet and Eastern Bloc intelligence agencies sort of desperate to find assets to cultivate of people that may have some information.
Yes, and what you have to remember is in the mid-1980s, in the late 1980s, people didn't know that the Soviet Union was about to collapse. I think most people, if you asked most Soviet citizens during that period, even under Gorbachev, who to some degree was a reformist, they thought the Soviet Union and the system would go on forever and ever and ever. What's interesting is of course, actually, it didn't. The Soviet Union as a regime collapsed. But I think what we've seen, and this plays into the whole kind of Trump and Russia story, is the system, the Soviet system, if not the ideology, and certainly the methods of espionage, of KGB espionage, continued, and of course saw a kind of big resurgence under Vladimir Putin after he became president in 2000. So the playbook continued, even if the state withered away and died. And I think all of this is important to explaining Donald Trump, because the Russians, the Soviet Russians, the post-communist Russians knew who Trump was. They knew he was someone who fitted the kind of characteristics they wanted from a potential asset, from a confidential contact. I almost fell off my chair laughing when I saw one top secret KGB memo leaked by Gordievsky from the mid-1980s, a personality questionnaire about the kind of people that the KGB wanted to approach in America. And they were after people who were narcissistic, vain, who were corruptible, who were adulterous, liked cheating on their wives, and who were poor analysts.
So Donald Trump, essentially.
Yeah, not just Donald Trump, but Donald Trump was the kind of KGB dream candidate. He was off the scale. He ticked every box. And So he was someone who, by the late Cold War, was very much in the system of the Soviet security service, the KGB, and its Eastern European allies.
And so in the 1980s, so when Donald Trump goes to Moscow, you know, that in some ways is a very unusual trip. You have a guy who's sort of the pinnacle or tries to sort of embody American capitalism going to Moscow in the late 1980s. Maybe you could sort of talk about that trip and how you sort of perceive of it.
I think that trip is really quite important if you were to understand collusion. What's interesting about it is that we have quite a good witness on this, that the Soviet ambassador, the new one at the time, the incoming Soviet ambassador, was someone called Dubinin. His daughter worked in New York for the United Nations for the Soviet mission. Now, everybody pretty much knew that the Soviet mission to the United Nations was a kind of hotbed of KGB activity and was more successful, actually, than other KGB residencies in America. And the first thing that Dubinin does after flying long haul from Moscow to the eastern seaboard is to pick up his daughter, drive to Trump Tower, go up to the executive floor, knock on Trump's door. And according to the daughter, Trump was pretty kind of grumpy about this, grouchy. And then Dubinin, who by all accounts was a rather charming man, he's dead now, but he said, you know, Mr. Trump, in the Soviet Union, we admire you. We think you are a businessman, or a developer of genius and vision and so on. And Dubinina, the daughter, said that Trump melted in response to this flattery, like it was like honey to a bee, was her phrase. And there was a lunch, there was an invitation. Trump was formally invited, this is in The Art of the Deal, his ghostwritten memoir, by Interest, which was the Soviet Foreign Travel Agency, is basically the KGB again, who decide who gets into the Soviet Union and keeps track of visitors, foreign visitors, when they get there. So we can say that the KGB, in essence, brought Trump to Moscow. He had meetings with officials and discussed a hotel deal. But I think what's more significant about this trip is that my best interpretation of it is that the sort of KGB and the Soviet state more generally were checking Donald Trump out. He stayed in the National Hotel, which is just around the corner from Red Square. It would have been bugged. Absolutely, it would have been under KGB control. I know from memoirs of former KGB officers who defected that this had been used to entrap other foreigners in the past and to blackmail them. And the Trump file, the kind of Moscow file on Trump, would have been supplemented by this technical readout, by bugging, by conversations with Trump. And there would also have been a psychological evaluation of him, quite in depth, I think. And just lastly, there's a kind of curious footnote to this story, is that Trump comes back about 3-4 weeks later. He says two things. First of all, he announces that he is thinking about running for president of the United States. This is kind of reported in the U.S. media. And he also takes out an advert in 3 American newspapers criticizing Ronald Reagan's foreign policy. Now, Trump is many things, but I think even now he's not really a foreign policy specialist. And this is very curious. And the question is, did someone put this idea in Trump's head, or did this come from Trump? Trump himself may have forgotten, but it's a very strange postscript to an already strange episode.
I'm Paul Woodhull, the executive producer of the Asset Podcast. If you would like to hear the full hour-long conversation between Max Bergman and The Guardian's Luke Harding, please go to our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/AssetPodcast. patreon.com/AssetPodcast. To hear the full interview. Thank you.
I met Paul Manafort in Kiev, in Ukraine, in about 2007 and 2008, when he was working for Viktor Yanukovych, the then prime minister who became president in 2010. Now Yanukovych was Paul Manafort's last client before he took on Donald Trump.